Okay, welcome back to the afternoon session of the Second Court of Appeals. We are going to hear one more oral argument this afternoon, and I will go ahead and get started and ask, the clerk Bonnie to please call the case. Then we'll start. Okay, Mr. St. John.
Thank you, Judge. Sometimes God likes to test you because the minute y'all came out, my left contact tried to go crazy on me, so bear with me. Now, I want to thank the court today for the opportunity to address the court briefly. I'm going to give the court back some of its time because I have to drive to Houston in a little while to argue with the Fifth Circuit in the morning in Houston. So, Justice Gardner, Justice Meyer,
you want a Kleenex for your eye?
Thank you, Your Honor. My eye is watering up.
Okay.
You watch a basketball game last night?
I did, Your Honor.
You see that guy get his finger stuck in his
eye? I did. His contact went flying.
And
I saw today, side note, I know my time's about started, apparently someone was flying back from the game and seven folks crashed in Illinois and lost their life in an airplane.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. I did not know that.
And most respectfully, though, thank you for the opportunity to speak to the court today. I'm going to be brief. As the court is well aware, and I tried this case, I inherited it from another attorney, but I tried the case. Insanity defense is a very difficult defense in Texas and in anywhere in the United States. So I want to narrow my focus specifically on the jury's conclusion. I would suggest to the court on my point one that the evidence was legally insufficient to support the jury's rejection of the insanity defense. And as Mr. Conner and I discussed before coming in here today, insanity defense is a fact-based defense on experts and overall testimony from medical records, psychological records, and things of that nature. So the court has to kind of do a balancing test under the case law in terms of that possibility of rejection for the jury's conclusion that I didn't prove by a preponderance of evidence that my client was insane at the time of the offense. As the court is aware, under Bigby and Ruffin, the issue is, at the time of the offense specifically, did that person know that her conduct was wrong and that conduct equals illegal? What I would suggest, based on the totality of the evidence and the testimony from different witnesses, that Colette Reyes did not know that her conduct was illegal or wrong. And the court can look at different testimony from the different psychologists that testified for Ms. Reyes and against Ms. Reyes. Briefly, her history started in 1994 in California. She was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, and other disorders. She didn't just magically, on the day of the event, become mentally ill. But that's the test for the court is, at the time of the event, did she know specifically her conduct was wrong? And I know y'all were all experienced trial judges in the past and jurists. People that are mentally ill, Justice Gardner, don't just magically, they can still function in society. They can do certain things. And Steve Conner is a friend of mine, and his argument is that how could she function if she was insane? Well, I would suggest that insanity is at the specific instant of the offense conduct. So I've tried cases like this before, and I just finished one in Stephenville, and folks think that people who are mentally ill, they can't function. Well, she could function to a certain degree, but it is, and even Dr. Price, though he said that she had a personality disorder, which is not mental illness, he did say she has some type of disorder specifically. Now, I inherited Dr. Fallis from another lawyer, and she did not say on the stand that she could specifically state that my client was insane at the time of the offense, but her overall testimony indicated that, and that's a question of fact for the jury to decide. More specifically, The evidence suggested that my client was insane at the time of the offense. And what's important the court might want to note is the two detectives that took Colette Race into custody, one is now passed, Jim Ford, who I'm sure Judge Meyer remembers and Justice Gardner remembers. Mm-hmm. They specifically didn't want to ask Colette Race any questions. And in the testimony, they give a reason for that. Jim Ford's partner testified that they didn't want to talk to her based on her mental state. Well, that's a true reflection of how she was at the time of the offense. Not about that she could look up some insurance policy after it happened, not about other things that seem logical to us. So the real test is at the time of the offense, did she suffer from a severe mental disease or defect? And I would suggest to the court that she did.
Well, her mental state after she just killed her husband might be different than it was at the time that the actual trigger was pulled, might it not?
Absolutely, and that is exactly what the law is, Justice Gabriel. The law is at the time of the offense, and the court, if it wants to take the time, can go back and listen to the recording made by Colette Reyes because she was being allegedly abused by her husband. At the time of the offense is the test, not any actions that she had before the offense or after the offense. And the state argues that because she followed commands of the police, followed other commands of different folks, that she had to be sane. Well, I would suggest that she was not sane at the time of the specific offense.
Is there some case that says that just because she's diagnosed as having a personality disorder rather than a mental disease or something, that this personality disorder is my question,
that
would preclude her from being insane?
No, Your Honor.
Or finding of insanity?
No, Your Honor. That is Dr. Price's conclusion. That's his, I'm just going to be honest, that's his fallback position on a lot of cases I've had with him, and he's hired by the state. He determines that they're not mentally ill, that they have a personality disorder under the book they use, and I think it's Manual 4 when they were used back then, is that if you have a personality disorder, it doesn't equate to mental illness. And I would suggest that she was severely mentally ill.
But the statute says that it has to be as a result of a serious mental disease or defect.
That's exactly, yes, Your Honor, that's
okay,
correct.
Okay, so personality disorder in their world is not a serious mental disease or defect.
That's correct, Judge, but that's why in our world, the psychologists don't determine, they don't ultimately determine if someone has a severe mental disease or defect. That's up to the jury, but I would suggest that the jury was misled, you know, quite frankly, in testimony in terms of how Colette Reyes really was at the time of the offense. My other issue I want to briefly address with the court is the comment by the prosecutor, and here's the bottom line. Whatever the jury thought of her, she truly was mentally ill. It didn't rise to the level, so be it. One argument was that she's trying to police or fashion her insanity defense based on her outburst during court. And one of the outbursts that happened was when Mr. Colston was addressing the jury, and I've noted it in my brief, and specifically he's talking about the shooting and stuff, and it goes on, and apparently Colette Ray says hallelujah after Mr. Colston says something, and then Mr. Colston states she knows what's going on, and the defendant, Jesus, hallelujah. And then Mr. Colston states, and you will notice when I said that she shot him in the head, that's when she screamed hallelujah. Then I made the specific objection to that and asked for mistrial. Now, quite frankly, I historically would ask that the jury disregard that, but I thought that was so egregious, and the law says I don't have to. I didn't ask for an instruction to have the jury disregard, but I would suggest that he did specifically comment on her ability not to testify, and I would suggest to the court it did affect her overall outcome in the case. And I had some concern about that also. I would suggest that the court can go back and look at the balancing of how Mr. Connor very articulately lays out the things that might be considered where she's not sane. But if you go back and look at the things where he lays out where she could be insane and look at all the testimony from, I think there must have been four or five or six different mental health experts testify as to how she really was, the court can take that consideration and make the correct decision based on the law. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Now we'll hear from the state, from Mr. Conder.
May it please the court, Stephen Conder on behalf of the state in this case.
Counsel?
I am going to focus first part of my argument on addressing the points raised concerning the jury's rejection of the appellant's insanity defense. I think Mr. St. John has set out the law in the sense that Texas has a very strict standard of insanity, that the time the offense was committed, the defendant did not know her conduct was wrong due to severe mental disease or defect. Texas operates under a presumption that a defendant is sane and intends their act's natural consequences. And it was the defendant's burden at trial to prove that his client was insane. And I keep in mind, Texas doesn't recognize any lesser version than the insanity defense. So it's does she insane, or is she sane or insane? But I think a more important point from an appellate perspective is from what framework do we evaluate this? And it's not that we go back and look and say, well, if I sat on the panel, I might have looked at this evidence or this particular evidence and I might have come up with a different result. I think instead the Court of Appeals has given us some very clear guideline on how we evaluate legal and factual sufficiency claims with insanity defense, with the rejection of a defendant's insanity defense. I think those y'all on the panel with your more civil experience than I do, that's probably old ground because it's going back to the traditional civil standards of legal and factual sufficiency review. And so under legal sufficiency, all the court does is they look at the evidence that is favorable to the jury's determination that Colette Reyes was sane at the time she shot her husband, and find out, is there a scintilla of evidence to support that determination? Is there more than a mere scintilla, excuse me? And I think if the court looks at the evidence in this case,
you mean, is there more than a scintilla that she was insane?
That she was sane.
Yeah.
More than a mere scintilla of evidence that she was sane at the time she shot her husband. Because the defense has the burden to prove that she was insane.
Right.
And I think if the court looks at, and I'm not going to go through all the evidence because I think we've laid those out in the briefs, but I think if the court looks at the evidence that was presented to the jury, that there is more than a mere scintilla of evidence that she was sane at the time. I think just looking at the testimony from Dr. Price and his evaluations report is sufficient evidence for the jury to say, we believe believe Colette Reyes was sane when she killed her husband.
Okay, well, this is an affirmative defense. Insanity is an affirmative defense. The defendant has the burden of coming forward with some evidence more than a scintilla to support a finding that she was insane. So it seems to me that would be what we were looking at. Was there, under factual insufficiency?
Under factual insufficiency, I think the court of criminal, let me switch over to that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The Court of Criminal Appeals looking at this, and it's the Matlock case, and it's discussed, I try to discuss it throughout the brief that I filed, but I think in that case, then the reviewing court needs to look at all of the evidence in a neutral balance and determine, is the evidence so strong against the jury's verdict that the jury's verdict was manifestly unjust? And I think that if you balance it, particularly in light of the two lead mental health experts who testified, Dr. Fallis and Dr. Price, you'll see Dr. Price was very clear-cut in his view based upon his evaluation. Colette Reyes was sane when she shot and killed her husband. Dr. Fallis, she testified some to the defendant's mental issues, but she would never come out and say that the defendant was insane. And I think the case law is out there that says if you've got two experts and let's say they had two exactly opposite points. One said, this person's sane, and the other one said, this person's insane. And the jury decides, based upon the experts, that they go with the experts as they're saying, I think that is factually sufficient evidence to support their determination. And I think We have even more so here because Dr. Fallis would not come all the way out and say that Colette Reyes was insane when she killed her husband. And so I think in this case there is sufficient evidence to support the jury's decision not to to reject the appellant's defense that she was insane. In terms of the prosecutor's comments during jury argument, I don't think this is what we would think is a traditional comment on the failure to testify, because if you look at what the comment at when Mr. Colston commented upon it, he was not commenting on. It's not your traditional sense of when we think of commenting on the failure to testify, where someone standing up and going, or there's someone we haven't heard from, or there was no evidence of remorse, or there was no. In the classic cases that we see in the case law, here his comment followed after she made a very clear outburst in court. His comments were directed to her outburst in court, and I think I cited the Johnson case, which is a fairly old case, but still valid law in Texas, that a prosecutor can comment on a defendant's outburst in court. He can't go that far from it. He needs to keep it focused upon their outburst. But their outburst should be treated like any other evidence that went before the jury. And I think Mr. Colston showed some pretty good restraint in this case that he basically said, look at her outbursts, directed her outbursts, and he didn't use that to go on and expand. And she never got on the stand, she never testified, she never, you know, the things that we think of in a traditional comment on the fair to testify. And that's believe that his comments were clearly within the law and were not an improper comment on fair to testify.
In other words, he was commenting on what she did say, not what she didn't say.
Yes, Your Honor, and commenting on her actions before the jury.
She was removed from the courtroom a couple of times during trial, is that correct?
I believe that's my understanding. I think Mr. St. John will probably have answered that better since he was present there, but I believe that is correct. Unless the court has any further questions, the state would rely on its brief for the remaining parts of this case.
I don't believe there are any more questions there, so we're ready for rebuttal. Mr. St. John.
Most respectfully, and I know the court's had a long day, the court you don't just look at the testimony of experts to determine if someone's insane. You look at all of the evidence, and I'm not going to hash back through it. The court can look at the record, but Colette's sister, who's a physician, testified to her bizarre behavior over the years. And also the bizarre behavior shortly before the event occurred. Even her daughter, who hates Colette Reyes, and I don't blame her, quite frankly, testified to her mother's bizarre behavior. I'm not going to go into the things where she stripped nude and act completely bizarre at home. And she did have, Your Honor, she did have outbursts during trial, and Judge Berry did have to remove her. She wouldn't restrain herself. I would suggest she couldn't restrain herself based on her overall mental disease or defect. So I would suggest to the court that the jury did make the incorrect decision based on the evidence presented to the jury. Thank you.
Are you, is it your position that it should be legally insufficient evidence or reverse on the factually insufficient or overwhelming weight?
Factually insufficient, Your Honor.
Okay. Reap for a new trial?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, well, thank you both
thank you.
Very much for your arguments.
Thank you, Judge.
Your case is submitted.